Over to you, Tim.
Thanks, Rob, and thanks everyone for coming. Before we get started, just a couple of housekeeping items. You know, the lawyers are going to put up all sorts of fancy slides, so I'd encourage you to read them. We are doing fireside chat. I've got an iPad up here if you want to email a question, but we'd encourage questions in the audience, and there'll be a mic runner, and if you can wait for that if you have any questions. And with that, we'll get started. We're delighted to start off with Rogers Communications. We have Tony Staffieri and Glenn Brandt, the CEO and CFO of the company. Gentlemen, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
We're going to get to fundamentals, but I think it's obviously top of mind for a lot of people in this room with the Shaw transaction. And maybe we'll just start there, Tony, with an update on the deal, if you could, please.
Great. Well, good morning, everyone, and thanks for having us, Tim. In terms of the Shaw transaction, the next step is the tribunal hearing, which starts in just over 8 weeks, scheduled for November 7th. It's scheduled to last about a month, although given that we now have a remedy proposal in place, we expect that to last a few weeks. Our expectation is that there is a possibility to get a decision from the tribunal this year. Following that, we would then look to the minister and ISED to provide their approval, which we would expect in due course. So there is an optimistic opportunity for the transaction to close this year. But to the extent that it goes beyond the end of the year, you will have seen that we've put things in place to ensure that we have certainty on deal transaction. We've extended our timeline with Shaw and with Videotron into 23, but importantly, we extended the financing for a full year to the end of 2023. While we're disappointed that the government has taken quite a bit of time to approve this transaction, we welcome the opportunity for the tribunal to take a very principled and objective view on our file, and we're confident with the position that we've put forward. We are proposing a remedy solution for wireless that would create a wireless fourth player in Canada that's stronger than we have today in terms of a fourth wireless player with Videotron. And we think the facts on that are extremely compelling. We'll create a fourth wireless player that will have almost 4 million subscribers, cover 85% of Canada. Videotron brings to it robust spectrum holdings, including 3500, which Freedom does not have. And so it has a very clear roadmap to 5G. And then, of course, they think about wireless and cable every day, and so bring deep operational experience to it. So we think we've addressed all the issues that the government has put in front of us and look forward to the tribunal process.
Right. I mean, implicit in that, is it fair to say that there's not a lot of dialogue between the proposing parties and the Competition Bureau at this time?
We're at the stage where we're exchanging evidence, and you'll see some of that trickle out in a public forum and have seen over the last
couple of
weeks and upcoming few weeks. There is a scheduled mediation with the Competition Bureau on October 27th. We welcome a dialogue to try to close this then or even before that. We strongly believe, and we've said all along, the interests of all stakeholders are better served by getting an expedited resolution to this file for a number of different reasons, but in particular for customers. And so we're open to that, but we haven't had any meaningful response from the Bureau to move this file forward ahead of the tribunal.
You mentioned you think you're hopeful that it'll be an expedited process at the tribunal. For a lot of us, this is our first time really diving into one of these tribunal hearings. What are your advisors telling you who've been through this before, how the process works through the tribunal hearings itself?
The tribunal is a very quasi-judicial process, and so it's very structured in terms of having a panel of judges. The trial, as I said, we believe will last several weeks, and then following that, a decision would be rendered. Depending on the outcome, either party could appeal, and the appeal would be to the Federal Court of Appeal. And in the event that an appeal is granted, then that would add several months to the process, which would put us into 2023, or at least the first part of 2023 in terms of receiving approval.
Right. Now, you mentioned you've taken some risk off the table by addressing some of the funding covenants with respect to closing dates. Maybe, I guess it's for you, Glenn, what are the implications of what you've done with the SMRs?
Thank you, Tim. The SMRs we originally had in place on the bonds we issued back in March, we issued 13 billion Canadian dollars. That rounded out all of the funding we needed to close the transaction. We have 6 billion of committed bank term loans, and then we had the 13 billion of bonds that had an original special mandatory redemption date on 12 billion of that at year-end 2022. If we didn't close the transaction in calendar 2022, then we would have had to have redeemed the bonds that we issued for the Shaw transaction. We have the funds held in reserve for the closing of the transaction, 13 billion dollars. We approached the bondholders in late August requesting extension for a fee of $600 million in two installments. We paid Canadian equivalent 520 million for the initial installment to extend by 1 year that mandatory redemption date. We now have those bonds in place until year-end 2023 to get our approvals completed in Ottawa and to use that funding for the transaction. In the event we do extend into 2023 and don't close in calendar year, there's a second installment payment on the consent solicitation fee of about 275 million. The total Canadian of the fees, if we don't close this year, will be 800 million Canadian dollars, but it gives us funding certainty on all of the funding we will need to close the transaction. One last point on those bonds. We issued those at a coupon rate of 4.2% on a weighted average term of 14 years back in March. Even with the full economics of the full 800 million Canadian dollars, that effective coupon rate for a 10+ year term, almost 13 or over 13-year term remaining is still inside 5%. If we were to go to market today and issue those bonds, I'm very satisfied that 5% coupon falls inside where we would issue now or any time over the next 12-24 months. We're pleased with the funding. We're pleased with having the enterprise risk off the table. The bondholders were overwhelming in their submission of their consents. The funding risk is looked after.
Right. What are the discussions like with the rating agencies these days? If we think about a pro forma Rogers and Shaw, where do you think your pro forma leverage will be?
Sure.
How comfortable are the rating agencies with that?
We are in frequent contact with the agencies, explaining our plans. A little more so with the Shaw transaction because of a few more details still to be resolved, but honestly, not that much more than we would ordinarily. We stay pretty close with them. Over the years, we have investments in spectrum. We have this transaction, obviously. They're comfortable with our plan. They're comfortable with the execution to date. They were pleased to see the extension of the funding, the SMR, so that it took that part off the table. They continue to have us on watch until they see the final capital structure, including the remedy sale proceeds. Really, the only remaining pin to set up on this transaction is the remedy proceeds and closing time for the transaction. They're satisfied with the risk profile, with the execution. When we close, we will be right around 5x leverage. When we first announced the transaction and started speaking with the agencies, that was closer to a 5.4x leverage. Through improved performance through this year in particular, we've seen that come in to right around 5x, including the impact of the consent solicitation fee. we're satisfied with where we are. The rating agencies seem satisfied as well.
And what can you tell us about the $1 billion synergy target? I mean, you've been at this for almost 18 months now. Mm-hmm. You have a very experienced executive in charge of the file in Robert Depatie. How are you thinking about the $1 billion target that you've put out there to the street?
We've had one of the upsides. I always look for a silver lining. One of the upsides to the length of time it's taken us to get our regulatory approvals in hand has been the additional time we have on executing on synergy. And there's two exercises going on right now. One is just straight performance improvement and right-sizing some of our cost lines within Rogers, as well as investing more in customer-facing functions in particular. You're seeing that in our results. Some of that will carry through to closing on Shaw and sets us up in good stead to be ready to look after ours and the Shaw customers coming in. It's also giving us a little bit more time to clear the headspace or the headroom for bringing in Shaw leadership, but also identifying the key vendor contracts that we want to look at on closing, right-sizing our organization, figuring out which operations and numbers we're going to have still located in Toronto, what portion of our operations across business units as well as within the head office. My finance organization will have some key leadership and individuals located in the Calgary office. So we've had a little bit more time to work with our counterparts at Shaw, identify the right leadership to bring in, as well as prepare for when we start looking at vendors and renegotiating some of the terms. Some of it is just aligning price and quantity across the two companies, and some of it is reflecting the fact that we will now have just that much broader a presence in Canada, and that will drive some economies.
Okay. Before we move on to fundamentals, does anybody in the room have any questions related to the Shaw transaction? All right. Well, let's move on to fundamentals. The wireless numbers have been excellent through the first half of the year. Can you talk about how we're late into the third quarter, through back to school season, got another heavy selling period ahead of us? How are you thinking about the wireless business these days, Tom?
I think it'd be helpful to outline the backdrop.
Yeah.
And you saw in the first half of the year very good growth in the wireless space in terms of total subscribers for the industry. And importantly, our performance in terms of market share capture within the first half, we're extremely pleased with that leading position. As we headed into the third quarter, back to school, what we saw is a continuation and perhaps even a bit of an uptick with more foreign students coming into the country. Immigration continues to be strong. It's looking like that we may approach in Canada about 450,000 new immigrants. New to Canada, and that compares to 300,000 a few years ago. And it looks like that increase is going to continue for a few years. And so against that backdrop of a healthy growth in the subscriber base, we're seeing very good performance in our own franchise with respect to that. We had an impact as a result of the outage, but it was very isolated, and it was the same in both wireless as well as cable. But as we proceeded to back to school in August, and we look at our trending today, we're back to levels that we were previously at. And so we're quite pleased with the way we recovered, both from an operational network, but importantly from a sales execution and base management perspective, relative to the momentum we previously had.
Right. There's a couple things to unpack there. Maybe if you could service revenue growth was quite strong, around 8%, I believe. So what were the drivers there beyond the volume growth in terms of the loading? I mean, you've called out roaming in the past, but you've also done some base management things. So maybe if you could talk a little bit about service revenue growth.
As you suggest, service revenue on the wireless side has been helped by the return of roaming, which has largely been driven by the consumer side of it. Business continues to lag and still is an opportunity in terms of roaming revenue. So quite pleased with that. but we also look to the fundamentals. Beyond volume, how are we doing with respect to underlying ARPU? And one of our concerted focuses beginning in January was to look at moving our subscriber base and volumes to the Rogers brand and our unlimited plans. And we're quite pleased with that migration. And so what we see is two things. One, in terms of customers coming in, new to Rogers, indexing to our unlimited plans. And as the population continues to use the phone outside of the home, we're seeing data usage back in the 30 to 50% year-on-year growth rates. Average 5G user would be in the 8 to 9 gigs per month. So very healthy usage demographics, and make the value proposition for unlimited even more compelling. So that's first and foremost. And then in terms of base management, the same type of phenomenon. And so, as we've said, what you'll see us continue to focus on over time is an indexing to the Rogers brand, a better delineation of our flanker brands, Fido and Chatter, and the value proposition of those will be much more defined and has been much more defined as we continue to move to the focus on, as I said, the Rogers brand.
So is it one of the takeaways from this that the performance that investors saw in the first half, you're not seeing any meaningful slowdown on that? The momentum continues through, so far through the second half?
The momentum continues in terms of the market as well as our performance. As I said, there is a one-time impact, both in terms of subscribers as well as financial. On the subscriber front for wireless, it is small and manageable.
Yeah.
In the overall scheme of our wireless base. And in terms of the financial, we've indicated $150 million credit that we'll be providing to customers, and that will be accounted for in the third quarter and will impact our revenue and EBITDA for the quarter.
Okay. When we think about the wireless market, I mean, it's going to be a steady state through the back half of this year, but assuming the Shaw deal goes through, how should investors think about the new Freedom? You've talked about how Quebecor, you can make an argument it is going to be better positioned than Shaw was as the owner of Freedom. How should investors think about the competitive dynamics of the wireless business pro forma Roger Shaw?
We have had healthy competition with four players in pretty much every market, and beyond the four players, at least 10 brands in each of the markets. And so post-Shaw, with Freedom sale to Videotron, we fully expect to continue to have that healthy competition in each of the markets, and it's our job to compete effectively with all the players in the marketplace. And so while we always welcome the competition, we're confident we have what we need to compete effectively.
One of the other items that is very topical is 5G. We've got another round of iPhones that just came out with more 5G capabilities. How are you thinking about the milestones you're looking to achieve there, and the path to or line of sight to incremental revenues from 5G?
Well, the business case is what you're getting at, Tim, for 5G. I think there's a couple of things. One is, as part of the brand evolution, 5G is focused on the Rogers premium brand. So in and of itself, to the extent that customers find the data usage and the experience that they have on the consumer side with 5G compelling with respect to video, especially for work video calls that works flawlessly and seamlessly, then the monetization is really going to come through what we would describe as that lift to the unlimited and premium brand. And so that's first and foremost, and you'll continue to see that. In terms of specific applications, use cases, solutions, that still continues to be on the enterprise side in terms of private area networks that we've disclosed before, edge computing, mobile computing in terms of vehicles. So those solutions continue to be isolated. In the overall scheme of enterprise revenues in wireless, they continue to be small and will take time to evolve. We don't necessarily see an explosion of that revenue in terms of here's the single event that's going to drive it until there's a use case application that is compelling And so we'll continue to participate and have the technology ready in the space. But the revenue side of it will just follow the rest of the world in terms of how that evolves.
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying there, I think, is that, you know, we're all waiting for the 5G ecosystem to develop. And to get there, we need, the industry needs all the low, mid, and high band spectrum to be deployed. So where are you in terms of deploying the mid band spectrum that you've acquired, the 3500?
3500 is, as soon as it became available, we launched it right away, and we continue to deploy it rapidly throughout the country across our entire network as we prepare for the 3800 spectrum that's coming on board. And so part of that deployment is commensurate with the small cell deployment where it works well with also. And so, you know, both of those are working in tandem as quickly as we can.
Let's switch over to wireline and on the cable business. I mean, you've had some, you know, quite a turn in some of the subscriber metrics the first half of the year. What's going on underneath that? That you've had such a, you know, a pop in video subscribers and continued growth in broadband subscribers.
The cable side of it has really been a focus back on the fundamentals. We've always believed we had a competitive advantage on the cable wireline side of the business in terms of having an internet solution that, as an industry, frankly, is well ahead of where consumer demand is today. Our average user would sit at about 300 megabits of speed. We offer 1 to 1.5 gigs across our entire footprint. We've launched recently, you would have seen, where we have fiber to the home, an 8 gig symmetrical. I would say those types of branding initiatives are really that and far ahead of where the consumer is. And so when you look across our entire footprint in terms of internet, we are very confident with the position we have there. Combine that with the product position, our Ignite platform, which is essentially the Xfinity platform for video and smart home monitoring. And so when we combine those together with customer experience, which we've put money into, frontline sales execution, which we've put money into, and we've looked to efficiencies elsewhere to fund that. And so we're pleased with the execution in those fundamentals while at the same time delivering expanding margins and at the same time delivering improving market share performance on the cable side. The outage did have, as I said, a one-time impact. It's about the same as the impact it was in wireless, but because the volume are lower, the net impact for the quarter will be a bit more stark than it is in wireless. But again, even there, as we look to our trending today, we're back to the levels we were previously at. And so very good recovery from the outage on a number of fronts. But those are the fundamental principles that you're seeing play out in cable.
Is there anything to call out in some of the verticals within there? I mean, what's happening on the MDU front? I mean, Toronto still continues to build a lot of condos and towers. It's you've traditionally been very strong in that market, but you know, Bell is also vying for those customers. Can you talk maybe a little bit some of the niches within there, maybe SME and MDU?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tim. As we look to those verticals, as you suggest, new construction, which has been extremely robust in our core territory of Ontario, very pleased with the market share performance we see in single family units as well as MDUs. We've had long-standing relationships with developers that go back decades, and ensuring that we have the right formula so that as customers are completing the purchase of their home, that we're right there and are in a pole position to capitalize on that move event. And so we're pleased with the market share performance that we have in that new construction. As we look to small business, that is another area where, frankly, we're underpenetrated and had been underpenetrated relative to the total size of the market. And so as we think about small and mid, that's an opportunity that is fueling the increase in our penetration. and is included in our total subscriber and financial numbers as well. So while we would have liked to have had more market position by now, the fact that we have upside is a positive for us in terms of the opportunity that's in front of us.
One of the other opportunities I think that's still in front of you is on fixed wireless. You can use that to infill some areas where it might not be economically feasible to do it with putting fiber and cable into the ground. Where are you in terms of rolling that initiative out across your various platforms?
I would describe our initiative as early stages. As you suggested, Tim, we see fixed wireless access as being complementary to where we have a wireline slash cable footprint. That's always going to be the better alternative, and given the pervasiveness of our network in our territory, it really is something that is going to be more beneficial for rural, where we don't otherwise have coverage. And so in that space, we've gone through, I would say, trials with different types of products. We have a product roadmap now that we think is much more robust. And so that's an area that we have been relatively underpenetrated relative to our competitor. Just are about to start to focus on that as an opportunity for us as well. But as I said, it will be much more limited in terms of market size.
Right. Okay.
Where it works though, Tim, it's powerful. I heard Robert's comments on getting through COVID. I had 2 years in my home office on our fixed wireless. I live an hour west of here, just in the northern reaches of Hamilton on a farm road. Not cable franchise area, but the wireline solution just wasn't strong enough. My fixed wireless worked flawlessly. I had 5 calls interrupted, all video conferencing throughout the day, 5 calls interrupted over that 2-year period. So where we have it, where it reaches, it is a powerful, powerful solution.
Yeah, good to hear. Is there any questions in the room? Well, Tony, I'll leave the last word to you. What message do you want to leave with investors before we wrap up?
It's really two principles. One is we're focused and committed to completing the Shaw transaction. In terms of when you look to our board, our controlling shareholder, committed to getting this done. We have Shaw that's committed to getting this done, and we have Videotron that sits in a similar position that's committed to getting this done. So we will work through the process. And be very disciplined and measured as we work through it. But it's not going to be a distraction and has not been a distraction to the improvements we've been making in our core operations. And we'll continue to focus on wireless cable and media, frankly, in terms of you should look to us for continued demonstration of performance as we head into the back half of this year.
Excellent. I think we'll leave it there. Gentlemen,
thanks
for coming.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, everyone.
Excellent.
Okay, I think I appreciate it. Okay, I think